Welcome to Weekly with WIC, episode number 6. Today we're talking updates. In this ever-changing environment, it seems there are constant updates. So today we're going to work through some of the larger updates that directly impact us. Love Local is a weekly podcast to help our community stay informed and either off the watch list or to move us down in this new tiered system. We want to do this for our kids so that they can be in school and our businesses to remain open. Hey, we're back, and welcome to this episode of Weekly with WIC. We're here with Dr. Wickenheiser, our local county public health officer, answering some questions regarding COVID-19 specifically. And today we are talking updates. I know in this ever-changing environment, there's things that are changing day to day, hour to hour in many times. So if you could sort of give us some updates most recently on this change with the tiered system and remind us again, how that affects us and sort of take us through what that looks like in our community.
So now it'll have been 2.5 weeks that the state has designed this blueprint for California. And the blueprint for California is a tiered system, and it's 1 through 4. The top tier is the purple tier, and that's the most restrictive tier. Whereas if you go to the yellow, that's going to be the least restrictive tier. The tiers are set up based on the test positivity rate, and the test positivity is less than 5% per 100,000, and it's a 7-day average with a 7-day lag. The overall case positivity, the number of cases, is based on the number of new cases per day per a population of 100,000. So to be in the most restrictive tier, you have more than 7 new cases per day per 100,000. And the least restrictive tier would be less than, or would be 1 or less. Those tiers, each one has different restrictions based on it. So if you're in the purple tier, the worst tier, then you're in a situation where the businesses are closed to indoor activity except for essential businesses and retail. Shopping malls, if they have doors to the outside, can be open too. But for instance, restaurants are closed to inside business. Bars are closed to inside business. In fact, bars would be closed overall. And then you have things like gyms, fitness centers, and those sorts of things having to do things out of doors. What does it mean for gatherings that people can have? When we talk about a gathering, for instance, if you're in the orange system, orange tier, then you can do 50% of the capacity of your building for church services. Again, unlimited for outdoor services. And that's true of other things. So that just gives you kind of an idea overall where the tiered system is. We in Pima County, since we have a population on the state website as listed as 68,000, everything's calculated on that. If we have, I think, 4.5 or more cases per day, that puts us over the 7 per 100,000. And that puts us into the purple system. You have to be on a lower tier for a period of 3 weeks, lower data for your tier before you can move to the next one. If you move tiers, if you move from a less restrictive to a more restrictive tier, you have 3 days to shut down those businesses. If you move from a more restrictive to a less restrictive tier, you can open those businesses immediately when announced, when those businesses are able to do that. So that just kind of gives you in a nutshell where we are with the tiered system. Some of the rules are changing as we develop this tiered system. There's something called the social equity, looking at if, for instance, we have a population of people that are the ones that are getting sick, are we addressing that? It means, are we testing those people? Are we isolating? Are we quarantining them? How are we dealing with them? If we're not, then that wouldn't help us. So that's the other part of this that's not been identified yet and defined, but that will be coming shortly.
Okay, so give us an example. If you have a business here in town that serves food and you're currently on the purple tier, what does it look like if we get the nod or the go-ahead and get moved to a less restrictive tier? How quickly can we go? What happens if we get on a more restrictive tier? How fast do we need to go up again? Just to recap that so people can really understand how it impacts us.
So the example of a restaurant is a good example. So for instance, right now we're in the purple tier. If we would move to the red tier, what would happen is the restaurant would be able to open indoors in addition to their outdoors if they're currently doing that. And they would be able to have a 25% capacity. And you can only move one tier at a time. You cannot move into a less restrictive tier. You can't jump tiers. Now, the other isn't true. You can be in a very low restrictive, but if you have terrible case numbers, you can immediately go to the higher tier. And the reason for that is because obviously, as you're moving from tier to tier, that tells you the severity of disease in your community. And if all of a sudden the disease gets more severe, you have to clamp down quicker. The reason that you can only move one tier in the other direction to lesser is because we know that every change that you make, it takes approximately 21 days to see the effect. So by having that period of time where you can move from, say, 25% capacity to 50% to 75% and 100%, by spacing it out over time, it decreases the risk of deteriorating in the other direction and having to close everything down again. So again, if you move to a less restrictive tier, as a business or restaurant, you could open up immediately as soon as that's announced. If you go from a less restrictive to a more restrictive tier, you have to be able to close down in 3 days.
Thank you for the clarification. So our goal is shooting for yellow.
If we got to yellow, that would be great. We would be at 75% capacity, you know, in terms of the businesses. Will we get 100%? We'll get 100% when we have the community as a whole is healthy.
You're listening to Love Local, a podcast series dedicated to fostering community engagement. During this season, we're focusing on COVID-19 and more specifically, information that will allow our kids to stay in school, reduce the positivity rate, keep our businesses open, and people working safely. This podcast is produced by Kate & Company in partnership with Expect More Tehama. To gain other valuable resources, visit expectmoretehama.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Love Local.
So at what point will we ever get, quote, back to normal? We hear that a lot.
Well, I think that term's been tossed about a lot, as you've mentioned. And I don't think we're ever going to get back to what we thought was normal before. It certainly will be a different normal. We do know that once the vaccine has been distributed in about a year, we should see a tremendous drop off in disease. And then with continued immunization of those people who haven't been immunized, that will continue to drop off even further. So we're looking at probably a year after vaccinations start before we really see things back to normal.
So how long do you speculate this monitoring and masking will continue for?
I will say a lot of that depends on when the vaccine becomes available. We've already talked about tentatively when it might be available. Those were the earliest estimates. If there are estimates that are more conservative and the vaccine comes out later, I suspect that this time next year, we will still be talking about it to some degree, to a much lesser degree, however.
Okay. One question that we have gotten recently from a community member is, why can't churches follow the same regulations as schools? For example, stay open unless there is an outbreak and then follow all of the previous precautions.
That That's a difficult question in some aspects, and then an easy question in other aspects to answer. First of all, churches are different than schools. In church, you have a homogeneous population. You have the elderly, you have the young. So you have this mixed population. In schools, you have essentially the same population groups, age groups, things like that. We've talked about before that kids at least up to age 10 and maybe even up to age 12 are much less likely to spread the disease. That's not true of adults at all. And so the other thing is with kids, they're usually the same cohort together. Now, in churches, what's different is everybody goes out, does their own life all week, goes to work, does all these things, then they come to church on the weekend. So they've been in contact with a lot of people, potentially a lot of exposure to COVID-19. The kids are going to be different. They're going to be spending the majority of their time with the same group of individuals all week long. And so it's not as much of an issue. So bottom line is that kids will carry less disease, less likely to pass it on than the adults. That's not true when you start looking at the college age kids because they're adults, and we've all seen what's happening as the colleges and universities have opened up, you know, the disasters that have happened in those communities. But there's been a whole number of instances where there's been outbreaks within the church system, and some of them have been pretty devastating outbreaks. And it's not so much that it's church, but it's the social gathering, getting all these people together. And we're all social beings, and people want to get close to people, they want to hug people, things like that. Those things happen more often in a church setting than you're going to see in a school setting.
Well, it's especially with that point you just made, you know, we are human beings. We're highly relational. And I know that there's been a lot of recommendation about social distancing and minimizing gathering. But can you give us some insight or maybe some recommendations on how we can still be social, but sort of gather smart, if you will?
The state of California 2 weeks ago now came out with cohort guidance. And the cohort guidance was basically written for small groups of individuals. And it was targeted initially at, for instance, kids that needed, you know, special learning, that sort of thing, needed additional help. And looking at what it would take to make it successful and safe. And what they came up with is they came up with a model that would be 16 people, 14 students and 2 adults. However, after further discussion, they basically came up with 16 people total, because sometimes when you're working with kids, you have to have one-on-one, particularly the special needs kids. And that's based on the epidemiology of what happens and why those numbers work. So the same thing can be said of adults in terms of getting together. Bottom line is it's cohorting. So if you as a family want to get together, I think that's fine, but you have to realize that if you're going to get together as a family, then you need to make sure that you're not exposing yourself to lots of other potential COVID before you get together with your family, because then you create problems. If you're good about what you're doing, if you're masking, you're doing your social distancing, you're washing your hands, you're not putting yourself where you're going to be getting exposed to COVID-19, and then you spend time with your family, that's perfectly fine. But what should you do when you spend time with family? You can still voice your emotions and show your emotions, but you should minimize the physical contact. You should minimize the physical closeness. You can sit like you and I are. You don't have to be sitting on top of the person. Those are the kind of things that need to happen if you want to be doing it socially correct.
Okay. Thank you again so much, Dr. Wick, for your time today. We appreciate it greatly. And the hope is that we can reunify and re-engage our community and really create some positivity and optimism and get to the heart of matters, which is love local. And we will get through this and we'll be stronger as a result. So join us next week with our next episode of Weekly with WIC.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Love Local, believing that an engaged community is a vibrant community. This episode was brought to you in part by Expect More Tehama, Tehama County Public Health, and our friends at the Community Foundation of the North State. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and visit our website at expectmoretehama.com. Do you have a specific question related to this podcast? Send us an email to kate@expectmoretehama.com.